Call the Resource Committee meeting to order. Today is April the 29th. It's 9:32. In attendance today, we have Representative Cato, Representative Jenkins, Representative Pierce, Representative Thompson, Representative Miller, and myself, Representative Schultz. The first bill we're going to bring up, I have Commissioner Wanneke here, and is going to be Senate Bill 120, because she has an appointment.
If it's 9:30, I can't be here, Mr. Chairman.
And I would appreciate, Commissioner, if you would, just a brief word on House Bill 385 at the close.
Oh, fine. Yes, I'm prepared to do that, and I also have some land disposal brochures that the committee might like to have. We've not gotten them through some other means. Good morning.
For the record, we have Representative Wallace here also.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Resources Committee. I'm pleased to offer my support for the agricultural bill, which is a committee substitute for Senate Bill 120 that you're hearing today. This bill will allow the Department of Natural Resources to take a number of actions that will help solve some of the current problems that are related to agriculture in Alaska. As you may know, the department completed a six-month assessment of agriculture in Alaska, and the results of that review were included in a report presented to the governor about 2 months ago. It was also distributed to members of this committee. And our review shows that the governor's decision to change the focus of agriculture in this state from producing for export market, at least at this time, to meeting in-state needs was a sound decision. The agricultural industry in Alaska has experienced significant growth during the last few years, and one example is that the cash receipts for Alaska farm commodities grew to $18,355,000 in 1983, which was a 16% increase over 1982 figures. So despite all the headlines and despite all the controversy that sometimes seems to surround agriculture in Alaska, it is one of steady growth, where the pieces are beginning to fit together. We don't have a complete statistical picture for 1984, but some of the figures that we do have also substantiate this. The 1984 barley harvest, for example, was 42% greater than the 1983 record harvest of 369,000 bushels. The oat production in 1984 increased by 20% over 1983. And we had the largest potato crop in 17 years in 1984, and that totaled 12,200,000 pounds of potatoes. But despite this progress and the pieces beginning to fit together, as I say, the farmers still face a number of problems, including especially high levels of debt, and the difficulties that are associated with marketing their farm products. So two of the solutions that we proposed in our report, establishing a production credit program and encouraging the preferential use of Alaska agricultural products by state agencies, are bills that have already been heard by this committee. Many of our other solutions are incorporated in the Senate Bill 120 that you're hearing today. And that includes provisions to increase the flexibility of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund to restructure farm loans, a provision to establish commodity marketing commissions to help farmers market their products. When you're considering this, I would ask you to remember that farmers throughout the country, of course, are experiencing difficult times, and Alaska's farmers' burdens are as great, if not greater. The additional burden that they have is one of, in less than a generation, turning a wilderness into a productive farm, something that in other parts of the nation have taken three and four generations to accomplish. And I think that's always important to bear in mind. While we also assist the farmers in Alaska with loans, their products have to compete with products from outside of the state. So a dollar spent in Alaska on Alaska farm products will go directly into the Alaska economy with no hidden taxes or cost to the consumer. And in addition, the consumer receives a fresher, more nutritious product. In your packet, you have a section-by-section analysis of the bill, and Carol Wilson from my staff is with me. We'd be happy to go through it with you or answer any questions that you may have with respect to specific provisions. As the chairman mentioned, with respect to House Bill 395, we very much support House Bill 395. We've worked closely with your chairman on this. The purpose is to extend to the Commissioner of Natural Resources the same authority in disposing of homesteads by lottery that presently exists for other types of land disposals. So there would be the option of requiring that the lotteries be held in the community closest to the land disposal. And also, in addition, would give the option of requiring that the winner of the lottery be present to win. And I know it's a concern to many, as it is to us, that the land disposals that the state makes be done in a responsible manner. And I think through many of the provisions in Title 38, many of the amendments to Title 38 that were made last year, and our policy to try to be responsive to local governments and local communities evidences that, and this would be consistent with that policy, and we would support the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I have just a couple of questions. First of all, I would like to know why you're removing irrigation from the sort of loans that the revolving loan fund can fund. And secondly, in light of that, and I presume that that's mostly obviously for grain farmers, then why are we turning around and allowing the loan total to exceed the $1 million limit by up to 50% only for dairy farmers?
The original bill, Mr. Chairman, Representative, the original bill did not distinguish the provision to exceed the $1 million limit between dairy farmers and other farmers. That amendment was placed on the bill in the Senate. The thinking behind it, that's my understanding anyway, the thinking behind it is that the dairy farmers are assured of market at this time, perhaps more so than other farmers. Do you have anything to add to that, Carol, with respect to why the distinction on the $1 million limit?
It sounds like Senator Petula. Not to speak to the other body.
Pardon?
This is committee.
The original bill did not make such a distinction.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I guess I have some concerns along this line because of the situation in the lower 48 with farmers. And from my perspective, a situation where they've been driven to the verge of bankruptcy in many cases because of loan programs. And I wonder if you could comment on your perspective relative to our creating the same kind of a situation here in Alaska.
Well, if I, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I think the situation has already been created. This bill and the other bills that you've had before you are solutions to try to address that situation. There are many farmers in Alaska who have very few loans before the agricultural revolving loan fund. But the so-called project farmers at McKinsey and in the Delta projects came in at a time when real estate prices were high, came in with expectations of having export markets, came in, as I said earlier, maybe not realizing the year that it would take to convert a virgin area into agricultural land. And many of those same circumstances happening in the lower 48 with respect to markets and with respect to the cost of real estate and all. These matters are to address that situation, not to create a new problem. the necessity for expanding the limits on the loan fund and the necessity for addressing production credits, for example, as a credit against the debt, is to save for the state its investment that it's already made, so that there's an additional investment in order to protect what you would lose if these actions are not taken.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up on that, I'm not sure how I understand, Commissioner, that you think that loaning more money is a solution to the problem.
I think bankers have to do it all the time to protect their investment. And
where does that process end? If you keep loaning more money and loaning more money, at some point you've dug the hole so big that it's impossible to get out of it.
Well, I think that's why the production credits so commends itself to me, because it addresses the two problems. It addresses this tremendous debt that the project farmers have, that if they don't get some relief, they'll have to walk away from it. They'll have to take bankruptcy. Not only will they lose everything that they've invested, but the state will also lose the principal and the loans that it has already invested in their activities. But the production credit then gives credit not to someone who is a speculator, but gives credit to the person who is in there trying to produce. So you only get credit against your debt if you're producing. And that's what we have to keep our eye on, is the establishment within the state of an agricultural industry that can meet the in-state needs of the people for fresh produce and for meat and for milk before we start looking outside our borders. If I may digress for a moment, Mr. Chairman, we were in certainly much the same situation, Representative Thompson, with respect to the Matanuska-Made Dairy. The state in years past had loaned a great deal of money to the Matanuska-Made Cooperative. They were forced into bankruptcy. We had to step in, the state of Alaska, as the major secured creditor in order to protect our investment and take over the operation of that dairy, which we've done, and which I might report to you is now in the black, and probably in a year or 2 years will be a viable enough operation that someone from the private sector will want to buy it as an operating business.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, I just, one of the first principles of finance is there comes a point when you have to make a decision to cut your losses.
Oh, I agree with that.
Walk away from it.
I agree with that.
I have some serious concerns about all our loan programs. The fisheries ones are probably in worse shape than the agriculture ones. But
in terms of delinquency, I think that's correct.
Not having been part of this when it was created, I just would like the record to reflect my concerns along those lines.
We felt when this administration began that, of course, we had inherited a very untenable situation. I feel that we've gotten a handle on it. I feel that what we're asking for as solutions are common sense ones, not greatly expanded ones. And I feel more optimistic about agriculture in Alaska now than I did a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, question to the staff. What's the referrals on this bill?
On 120?
This bill's not going to finance, is it?
Or judiciary.
Well, really, it should go to the Loans Committee, and I don't know why it didn't, so I may have to take a look at that. First question, a lot of these project loans, are they non-recourse loans with the farmers, or they are recourse to the farmer? My assumption is that they're non-recourse loans. Is that right, Ned?
Carol is
non-recourse loan is a loan that you take out where you're not personally responsible for the deficiencies on it, so that if you fail to repay the loan, the only thing the secured holder, the state, has is it can get the land back, but it cannot go after you personally for any deficiencies.
It depends on the farmer's granular. They have a lot of different things to collect. Whether it's challenged.
Would you look into that for me, please?
I'm sure that in the case of some of the loans at McKinsey, the ones that I may know about, they are recourse loans.
That would be nice to know, because I think that addresses Representative Thompson's question, is that if the farmer takes a walk off the land, if it's a recourse loan, The only thing the state gets is the land. They cannot go after the farmer for anything personally. And that's very commonly done in large real estate loan deals, is that the secured party just takes the project or the land as security. It's a different, if you own your house, if you walk from your house, you have usually have a recourse loan, so that if the bank takes a house back and sells it for $50,000 less than they've lent you, then they can go after you for the difference, the deficiency. But that would make a big difference in Dave's issue, is that if these guys walk,
I think that's a very good question.
Are they going through personal bankruptcy, or are we just getting the project back? The second question is, I'd really like to know what the Senate added on to the original bill, if we have the original bill over here. I think it's probably most of page 3, if I know what happens there. And I really don't, I think it's rather poorly written, and I don't understand what the intent is.
And let me correct myself, it does go to finance. It was the 3 that we got in yesterday that don't go to finance.
Okay.
It's
well, that's the Senate referral.
Representative Thompson.
I just would like to comment on that, if I might, Mr. Chairman. As a matter of SOP, I would prefer that we always have the original bills on the file so that we can compare them and just have substitutes.
We can get a copy of the original bill.
See, I just have a difficulty, Commissioner, on top of page 3 on the bill, where it's taken the loan terms on page 3 and or lines 3 and 4. It says, unless the term may not exceed 30 years, except that a chattel loan may not exceed 7. And then they've added this language, which says, unless the Agriculture Revolving Board determines that a longer term is in the best interest of the state. Well, you and I have been discussing what's best interest of the state language for a long time. And I think that could be a real difficult determination there. And would promote the purposes of this chapter, whatever they are. If the borrower is current in any existing ag loan and an existing chattel loan may be combined and amortized over the same period as an existing farm development loan. I think it's really kind of a messy language. I always taught us any sentence over 5 lines, I'd have a period in it someplace. The other thing is that as I want to talk in the ag loans now, there's a couple different loan programs there. I don't know which loan program this one's tapping into.
ARFL.
Is this the one that was created a few years ago, or is this the one that was created in 1953? Okay, and the outstanding balance in that loan fund is what, about $60-70 million now?
Yeah. That's 16.
There's not that much left.
The Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund has been going on for a long time. What has been added to its responsibilities since July of last year are all of the loans that were made by the Agricultural Action Council previously. So all of those functions and responsibilities came to the Division of Agriculture, and we put under the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund Board all of those loans in addition to those that they previously handled. So, loans, for example, like those that have gone to McKee for the meat processing plant in Fairbanks, loans that went to Mr. Donatello for the meat processing plant in Palmer, those had been Ag Action Council loans. But the McKee loan was finished up under the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund through the Department of Agriculture. So there is that distinction that you point out.
Representative Wallace.
Yes, I have a question on page 4, line 29. It refers to the increasing the board from 5 to 7 members and that there would be pay, transportation, and per diem. I'm wondering as to the increase, because we've been looking at, cutting down the boards and cutting down the services, and I wondered why the increase in the board members.
The agriculture, you're talking about
the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund is on
the board increasing it from 5 members to 7 members. The Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund Board, of course, is made up to some extent by representatives of the farming communities. It's been difficult to get that good representation with just the five members. so that you have representation from stock growers, for example, on the Kenai or Kodiak, representation from barley farmers in the Delta area, representation from produce farmers in Mat Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I guess we have to rely heavily here on your judgment. I have a great deal of respect for you personally, and I'd appreciate it as candid an answer as you could give me to this. In your judgment, you know, is there light at the end of the tunnel here, or are we just going to throw good money after bad?
Yes, I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. As I said, I'm more optimistic about agriculture in Alaska than I was a year and a half or 2 years ago. A lot of the problems are functions of world markets and the strength of the dollar that the other farmers in the lower 48 face. We have those problems, plus the problem of trying to go too fast, too soon, I think. And I think we've tried to take a very common sense look at it. One of the things that we do want to pursue for the future, and it's not before you, and we've not done the research on it, but in some of the larger farms, one of the recommendations that has been made to us is that we allow those large farms to be divided, and for part of that land to come back to the state for resale to other farmers for smaller operations. This kind of focuses on the Delta area. At the same time, there's a necessity to combine some of the farms in the McKinsey project. I also think there's a real necessity to maintain agricultural land for agricultural use. And I know that there was proposed legislation here, but something that we've taken care of administratively is to grant patents to the farmers, but with covenants that the land would only be used for agricultural purposes. I think that we need to learn from the experience of other states in that regard. And I think we have so little viable agricultural land in Alaska that we need that protection.
One last question, Mr. Chairman, if I might. How much is in the budget for this loan program at present?
We had asked for, what, $2.5 million? I have no idea.
$2.5 million for the ag.
For the ag revolving loan.
And $500,000 on the grain reserve loan fund is in the House budget.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman, I really appreciate getting the original bill, because I don't see.
Can you get a copy of it?
Page 3 on the original bill, section 5, is this preferential use of Alaska agricultural products. I don't see that in the CS.
Actually, that was taken out, Mr. Chairman, in a separate bill, and you have already addressed it.
It's presently in finance.
Which bill did it go into?
It was a bill by itself. We could get the number of it. And that's exactly what the title of the bill is.
And there's been quite a bit added, if I could ask. One is on homestead entry, section 7 of the CS for Senate Bill 120 is new. And I'd just like to know the effect of it. It's on page 6 is where they make the amendments of the CS on the back. The underscored language is what's being added to the existing law. This section allows somebody who went out and got a homestead entry permit can get a patent of the land if they comply with these conditions. And this one condition, I'd just like to know the effect of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Carol to respond.
Okay. It sounds like it's if you got a big chunk of land, we're cutting down the number of acres you have to put into production here or something.
Go ahead. Would you just give your name for the record?
Carol Wilson, Special Assistant to Commissioner Lenneke. The original way we had it in the original bill was to add Class 4 soils and keep the word less, so that a person getting homestead land would have to clear 25% of the land or 50% of the suitable class 2, 3, or 4 soil, whichever was less. The idea being that a lot of the homestead ag lands that had class 4 soils, it could be useful to grow grass or hay or something that you could use for grazing. For some reason, they didn't really like that language, and they changed it, took out the class 4 soils, but instead of leaving the word less in, put in more. So what it does now is you still have to either on the land clear 25% or 50% of the suitable class 2 or 3 soils, whichever is more. It still ensures that you have to clear something on the land, either 25% or if the land is a lot better and there's a lot better soils, 50% of those suitable soils. So the change from our original, there's no class 4 now, and it still requires you to do some clearing.
What's your opinion? I mean, you wrote the bill originally.
Well, we wanted to have class 4 in there, but if it's not, it's nothing terribly critical. It would be nice to have class 4 into that area.
And what effect would that, Mr. Chairman, if I could follow, what effect would having class 4 in there, what's the advantage, disadvantage?
It's just possible that you might get some homestead entry land that doesn't have class 2 or 3 soils, but has a lot of class 4 soils. So rather than just having them clear 25%, they might be clearing a little bit more acreage of the class 4 soil. It might make better use of the agricultural land.
I assume that none of these people are out there have land of which is all class 4 soils, huh?
They could have land that maybe was a little bit class 2, a little bit class 3. Maybe there is no class 2 or 3 on it. It's pretty hard to tell until you're really out there. I mean, they have some idea what it's like, but they really don't know acre by acre on that land.
Some real problems in the Delta One project when they disposed of the land and their classification, and they sold the land, and Ned, maybe you can help me with this, but when they sold that in the gymnasium in Delta, and there's a lot of classification there, and it said for loan purposes the soils had to be classified 1, 2, 3, or 4 to be eligible for loan, and then upon purchasing some of this land, some of the people went out there and upon clearing the land and getting maybe to one end of a 2,000 acre parcel, that classification of land was, I don't know, 5 or 6 or whatever, and there was no money available for those kinds of soils, and so that they really run into some problems on the on some of those bigger tracts of land in that soil classification system. But they'd already committed to a loan and signed to a loan or signed to purchase, and then found out that that they were not eligible for a loan because the land actually wasn't suitable for agriculture, some parts of it.
Chairman, I would. This bill has such a beautiful title. I hate to pass up an opportunity, but I would like to move Section 5 of the original bill back into this bill here.
Section 5.
It's in the original bill. That's the preferential uses of Alaska agricultural products.
But we already passed that.
We already have a bill on that.
The bill isn't into law yet.
But the bill is in. But the bill is in. It's in finance right now.
Yeah,
if you could assure me,
Mr. Chairman, that bill was going to pass into law, I wouldn't do this, but I don't think anybody here can do that. I'd just soon put it into this bill, and then
anything that you can do to assist me in getting it out of finance would be appreciated.
Well, I think I've got an idea right here, Mr. Chairman. That's a House bill, isn't it? This is a Senate bill.
I believe it is.
And this used to be in this bill, and I think we have a prime opportunity right here, and it wouldn't be good to pass it up.
And, Senate bill 57.
Senate Bill 57.
Preference legislature.
The Senate split it in resources. They split
right.
The original one into three bills. Because Rick Halford said that they were not all three going to pass into law.
Oh, that's the CS.
By House Finance.
No, by Senate Finance. Is there any, I would just like to move it in.
Well, I honestly don't have any problem.
Good.
Because I would like to, pardon?
I will second that motion.
I don't need a second.
Agree with Representative Sutton.
Do you want to make some copies of this so everybody could have it, or do we have it all?
Do you just want to incorporate that, the language of that bill?
Well, it's section 5 of this bill preference, and maybe we just run 6 or 7 copies. We could have it all here.
Commissioner Warnke, of course, you've gone through the Senate hearings on this piece of legislation, and they took it out. And I believe that you were in favor of leaving it.
Yeah, we supported it moving as a separate bill.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to me it does any harm to have it in two places.
No.
Mr. Chairman, I would note for the record that all of page 3 of the CS we have in front of us, and all the way on page 4 to section 4, line 24, I think, has all been added to this bill somewhere along its way. I didn't see any of that in the original bill. All the way from, as far as I can see, from page 2, line 13, to page 4, line 23, has all been added into this bill. And I agree with what they've done on page 2. I think that's helpful. Page 3, I have my natural suspicions about, but I don't quite understand it all. And the only thing I would ask for on page 3 is, where we're getting into those loan terms, is that if you've done any research to the effect of expanding those loan programs, what's the impact going to be on the funds? I mean, do you have any idea how many loans are going to be coming in, or how many extensions or add-ons, or do you have some numbers on that?
On the over million?
Yeah.
There might be at most 6 or 7 people who, well, under the original, before it was just straight dairy farmers, could have applied to go over a million, who were in good enough standing the board might even consider. And they thought out of that, perhaps only 1 or 2 the board might actually want to do something for, because the over a million idea is simply to someone who's basically in good standing but who needs that extra little bit more to complete finances for a job. And the over 200,000 is about the same money that might be 6 or 7, because the catch is you do have to be fairly a good borrower, someone that they're willing to extend themselves for. And that would be perhaps within the next year or two, and possibly to save really after that. The whole idea of really those rewritings and so on is to give the board some flexibility that they don't have now to perhaps repackage some of the farmers' loans so that they can have manageable payments, and that's the most important part of those sections.
Do any of these farmers have any CFAP loans you know about?
One. You know, 1 or 2.
Are they on the bad list? You know?
I don't know.
I don't think so. CFAP have been so selective that they stopped really giving loans after a few years ago. I think it was something to do with what happened.
Okay, we have the amendment, Mr. Chairman. I would move the amendment as in front of us.
Before you move that, I would appreciate it. And going back over the Committee of Subject for Senate Bill 57, the other one, Section 5, just speaks to agricultural products. The Senate Bill 57 speaks also to fisheries products.
I think, Mr. Chairman, to put the fisheries in, we've got to change the title, and I don't think we're going to be allowed to do that with the Senate bill. Senate Bill 57's title is an act related to preferences of agricultural or fisheries products.
Well, the only thing that I'm wondering then, if we put this into this bill, then we should amend this committee's, the Senate bill.
57.
Right.
Well, the motion I wanted to make was the language that's on page 3 of Senate Bill 120. The original bill is a preferential use of Alaska agricultural products.
Okay. Have we dealt with Senate Bill 57?
Yeah, it's gone.
Senate Bill 57 is an act related to the preferential use of
We just get a copy of page 3.
It's in finance. Fisheries products.
Just
agriculture.
Copy of this page 3 here. Just copy that page off, and that'll solve the problem.
If we pull out agriculture, then it's going to change the title of the Senate bill also. All I'm saying is that if we put this in and this bill would pass, and then this, let's just say that this 57 would pass, we would have it in two places. I guess it's no problem, but one would be Reagan. This is a 57.
Oh, he's copying off the language that was in.
Mr. Chairman, if 57 is referring to the same statutes mm-hmm. as 120 would, so if we put in Section 5, and that should pass, and then 57 would pass a little later, it would just change the statutes to refer to 57, so there okay. really would be no problem.
Okay. Representative,
suppose it's the reverse. I would like to ask Representative Miller, if you get 57 and rules first, would you intend to amend it to include the preferential clause?
That's good. 57 is the preferential
clause. 57 is the better version of all.
57 is broader. I don't know which one's going to come to you first. But.
Mr. Chairman, may I excuse?
Certainly.
I appreciate being with you, and I'm going to leave Carol in your good hands. We'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
I think we've got to figure it out.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
To discuss that, there's two ways that we could take care of it. Since 57 is better, a couple of ways you could do it. If 57 comes to the rule first and is passed, when SB 120 comes, that section could always be delayed.
Deleted,
you
yeah.
needed the rule.
Certainly.
Right.
I have no trouble with that.
Okay, what's passed out?
You have page 3 of Senate Bill 120. Everyone should have.
Okay, I would, just to get a motion on the table then, is Section 2 of that page. Oops.
Section
5. Where it refers to Chapter 16, Preferential Use Agriculture Product, lines 12 through
20.
Lines 28. I would move into the, what is this? This is Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 120, Finance Amended. On page 5, line 8, I would move to amend that with the amendment in front of us here.
Okay, there's a motion before us to adopt from, what was the original?
Senate Bill 120.
Senate Bill 120, from line 12 through line 28, to adopt that section and incorporate it into Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 120 Finance amended between line, right after line 8 on page 5. Are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on this? Representative Pierce.
On page 4. Line 3, I'm reading this correctly. In this paragraph, prime rate means the prime rate of interest normally charged by private lending institutions in the state. I'm sure there's supposed to be an extra word in there.
Charged by?
I would think so. Wouldn't be two private lending institutions.
Well, I had some, Mr. Chairman, if I comment on it, I had some confusion on that too, because this is accurate in the sense that if it's the prime rate that the private lending institutions in this state have to pay to borrow their money.
That's not a prime rate.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I mean, that's the way I would have to read this. This would be the rate that BM Barron's calls up Rainier Bank and borrows their money on overnight deposits or something, because that would be the money that, you see what Mr. Pierce has brought up on line 3.
Well, I would rather have it say prime rate means the prime rate of interest normally charged by private lending institutions in the state on the day, because the prime rate by a lending institution is the rate that it charges its best lenders and would be higher than the rate at which it borrows from other lending
yeah.
institutions. And I really think that we ought to, we're going to give them the leave to have more than the $1 million limit, then we ought to bring it up to a prime rate.
Was that the intention, or?
No, I think the intention was the way it's listed, but.
To have it at the rate they can borrow from, that's awfully low.
Well, it really is, Mr. Chairman, I think it's very confusing because that rate is very different to.
That's not a prime rate.
It's not a prime rate, but it's a difference. If B.M. Barron's needs some overnight money and calls up Rainier Bank and they have a running list there, they got to pay the rate. NBA calls up and needs some overnight money, maybe a line sum large enough where they can negotiate. You know, see, so it depends on which lending institution in the state you're going to use, too. That is not a fixed, and that's not a known number, and it changes every minute, every day. So I think it's a very tough number to use.
Representative Miller. Maybe I'll address this question to the banker in the group here. On page 3, line 23, on the portion of the loan below $1 million, the rate may not be less than 8% or more than the commercial rate, unless the commercial rate is 8% or less. I guess what they want to do is charge the commercial rate, and would that not?
Well, they then say in this paragraph, commercial rate means the prevailing rate of interest at private lending institutions at stake for loans similar.
See, it says at private lending institutions,
yeah.
Which is.
I guess I'd be more comfortable also charging what they are calling commercial rate for over $1 million too.
Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, if you use that same language, it's good language of interest at private lending institutions. If you put that in here, charged interest normally charged at private lending institutions instead of by.
So what we can do is just change this to commercial rate and make it commercial rate.
Maybe if somebody can correct me, maybe I'm just reading this wrong, but it sounds like this is almost in reverse to some of the loans that we have, like on Atlaska Housing. You subsidize the first 90, then you pay the regular rate above. It sounds like this. We make you pay the regular rate on the first million, then we subsidize the, or we charge it a lower rate.
You are reading it.
You read it. It's a little different, Mike, than AHFC, because AHFC has a net they don't go under. It's not less than 10.
Right.
Here it can go less than 8.
No, may not be less than 8.
It may not be less
unless
than 8.
Unless the commercial rate is 8% or less. Well, we don't have to worry about that.
See, so it may not be less than 8%. Unless the commercial rate is less than 8%, then it can be at the commercial rate.
No problem.
See, so you get 8% money if the commercial rate is higher, or you get commercial rate if the commercial rate is lower. And in this program here.
That's in the moot point section.
Yeah.
Would this be compatible with the language that's on the page 3 to charged at private lending institution on page line 3 that the Representative Pierce was talking about? That would be consistent, would it not?
If you change or put a by in there, that would be fine.
Or at.
Well, an at would probably be more compatible with the
charge. Well, that's what I was saying, because the other language refers to at.
I'm really interested. Well, then, do we mean a real prime rate of interest, or do we mean what it sounds like they were trying to work into this bill, which is the rate at which a bank can borrow from their corresponding larger bank? We need to make an executive decision on how much we want these people to pay.
Where are you?
Well, it's really trying to define prime rate, isn't it? Line 1, page 4 says, at a rate that may not be less than the prime rate prevailing at the time of the loan, may not be less than.
Right.
And then trying to define prime rate.
Representative Cato.
Isn't the point of the question, in the way the wording is they're talking about what private lending institutions have to pay? If we put either the word at or by in there, we are saying we're changing an entire meaning, and then they're no longer discussing what the bank has to pay for its money.
That's correct. Then we would be discussing what the bank. I mean, they could sit there and charge pretty much anything they wanted because they've got a definition, and you can go out and find money at any cost you want. I'd rather tie it down to prime rate that the private lending institutions charge. If we ever expect the banks to take over agriculture loans in those in the state, they're going to have to be able to make the interest that they charge for like loans, and we might as well start ratcheting it in. And it's for over $1 million only for, at this point in time, dairy farmers, although I'd like to amend that.
Do you want to put buy in there? Is that what you're...
I think at would be fine. Buy, at, yeah. Which would be better.
At is just compatible with the other...
That's what they use on the other one.
All I'm saying is that it just, it goes in there. On page line 27.
Well, you could put the reference rate of Bank America in San Francisco.
Well,
in there.
You know,
I mean,
that's
what we use in all our loan documents now.
If you want prime rate, you take the Wall Street Journal and look at the latest published prime rate in the New York, da-da-da-da-da. That's what the prime rate is.
What would be the average difference in interest between between what?
3 or 4%.
Oh, 3 or 4. That's considerable.
It's considerable. We're talking. The biggest problem with the definition, I mean, if we want to let them have the loans at a lower interest rate, I have a problem with that. But if we're going to do that, we need a different definition for prime rate than what is written into the bill, because it is indefinable, and we're not really. We might as well not bother to put a rate in. As the definition we've got in there.
Could you put 2% less than the rate you're being charged, prime rate being charged with that, give them a break and tie it to something substantial?
If you defined prime rate, you could.
See, prime rate's not a usable language, really, anywhere up here. It's just, you know, you have your federal discount rates, which are published. You have treasury rates, you know, which are published. You've got reference rates, says what the banks use now. They don't really use a prime rate anymore. It's a reference rate that's published by Bank America in San Francisco and in New York. But prime rate is, like I say, BM Barron's needs a couple $1 million to get through the night. They'll call up Rainier Bank, you know, and Rainier will just quote it to them. They don't have any negotiating power. NBA needs 10 or 15 million to get through overnight. They can make a couple phone calls and negotiate a little bit, and they can get a couple percentage points lower. But you call back a half hour later and the rates change. I mean, it's just,
well, the other thing is,
keeps moving.
The banks up here sell their funds to the Seattle banks on an overnight basis as often, in fact, oftentimes more often than they borrow funds on an overnight basis, and those rates are always different.
So I agree. I don't understand what prime rate means. And maybe you have a definition of it. This was some language that was added into your bill.
Yes, and the intention was people who perhaps would benefit from over $1 million were willing to pay a fair rate of interest, and I think they thought the definition was something that was fair. So if you want to change it and put words in there to do whatever it is, I don't
know.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the word at on page 4, line 3, after the word charged and before the word lending. And the reason for doing so is to put it in, and so we can act on this bill and keep it moving. This is going to finance, is that correct?
Right. Representative Sutton, I think you mean between charged and private.
Right. After the word charged, before the word private on line 3, page 4.
You said before the word lending.
Oh, excuse me. Okay. Add the word at. And in the meantime, we could get staff and maybe commissioner staff to work on the definition of prime rate. And
are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, that amendment is incorporated.
And we could also get a hold of the people who put this amendment in and let them work
on it.
We know
who that is.
I think we know who that is.
Well, yes,
we do know.
Yeah. Senate Resources, you're talking about Senator Coghill, who cares very much about his farmers, and Senator Curtula, who cares very much about his farmers, and Senator Halford, who wants to keep interest rates down.
No, but we don't have much time left in this session to get some of these things done.
Is there further discussion on 120?
I'm going to throw out a motion which would take the preference for dairy farmers out of section 2, subsection 2, page 3, line 14. I don't think it's fair to just have that available to dairy farmers and leave all other farmers out, particularly when we have taken away the availability of irrigation loans to those farmers. And I think it should just read except that the total outstanding balance may be increased by up to 50% if the borrower has held a loan, and just leave out is a dairy farmer. We're going to let the loan board set all the regulations, rules, standards, conditions, so on and so forth. And if you're going to do it for one class of people, I think you ought to do it for all the farmers. The grain farmers are probably in worse trouble.
Yes, they are.
And although we say that there's a dairy market, that's only because the state bought the dairy.
Yeah.
Chairman, I think I'm going to object to the amendment. Using the Thompson thesis, keeping the losses as small as possible. And the other thing is, I don't really understand why this section's in here in the first place.
And then let's amend the whole section out. Either be fair to everybody or take the whole thing away.
I can see where that would, where it would open it up and make available to other people that are related to agriculture. And
well, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about making people pay a rate that a market rate of interest, and presumably this new 7-member board is going to be very careful as to who they allow to have the additional loan funds. So, in the interest of some sort of fairness and equitability and non-discrimination, I think that we should either make it available to all the farmers or not allow it for any of them. And I would be willing to go either way, but I'd rather make it available to all of them.
Additional discussion on the amendment. The amendment is on line 14, after A, exclude dairy farmer.
All right. Mr. Chairman, what other kinds of farmers do we have?
Well,
grain farmers.
Good.
And we have some hog operations.
I suppose what I'm getting at, is that adjective accurate? Is there such a thing as just a dairy farmer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the McKenzie point is geared primarily to the dairy farm.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, maybe my knowledge of farming is pretty limited, but there are farmers who have been here for a long time, especially in the Mat-Su area, the 40 and 50 year farmers. And if you look at the delinquency rates on loans, you will find the overall delinquency rate on all ag loans is relatively high. But if you back out and separate those who have been there from the 50s and 40s on, and back out the Delta 1, Delta 2, and Fort McKenzie farmers, then you find that the old farm loans are in pretty good shape. And it's really the new farm loans, these big new projects that the state's been involved in, are the ones that are on the brink. And maybe that's the way the Mat-Su was too when it first started, back in the 30s and 40s. But if you just look at the numbers and how it breaks out, that's how the delinquency rates look.
There's a lot of difference, though, between that land as far as that was fee simple title land that was given to the people upon the homestead credits or homesteading it. So there's a lot different than,
I know, there's,
you know, 50
there's reasons
years later.
For it, but I just point that out.
If I could, I still need my, is a barley farmer, is that a dairy farmer?
Grain farmer.
No.
Grain farmer.
That's not considered a dairy farmer.
No.
Mm-mm.
Nor and a stock farmer that raises the McKees who raise hogs are not dairy farmers.
Yeah, the Bannons who raise hogs.
Yeah, a dairy farmer. Mr. Chairman, I'd just say that we do have some grain farmers in a lot of trouble, and a lot of that is very definitely the state's fault, and the fact that many of those people weren't farmers and attempted to be something that they didn't know how to be. A lot of those people have now fallen out. The people who've done well and who are doing a good job. There are also those people, and we sometimes tend to not allow them the availability of money because we're so angry that many of the farmers didn't make it.
Right.
And I'd like to give them an equal opportunity at the funds, particularly the hog farmers, who I have a love for since that's what we did at home.
Yeah. There's a very close relationship between the barley farmers and the people that are trying to produce on the dairy farms in supplying barley or whatever for feed. And any of the people that are in the red meat industry, they're trying to raise livestock. I know in the Delta area, some things have just come to pass. There's approximately 2,000 head of cattle being shipped in from Canada into Delta this month or this week or something. They're supposed to be there for feeding. And also, MAPCO is going to come down into the Delta area, and they're talking about putting a gasohol plant in. And if that thing goes, they can utilize 14 tons of barley a year, I guess. And
the profits they make from Golden Valley deal.
Took the words right out of my mouth. They'll be able to afford to do that.
Maybe I should have just said that there's a producer, yeah, petrochemical plant, whatever.
Mr. Chairman, I call a question on the amendment.
Okay, there is an amendment before us, and it was corrected. Our Representative Miller pointed out, after borrower is a dairy farmer. That's the recommendation is to delete that language. Are there objections to that?
Objection. I object.
Okay.
Okay, voice call vote for committee substitute for Senate Bill 120, finance amended. Delete on page 3, line 14, the words, is a dairy farmer.
And comma.
Representative Schultz.
Yes.
And comma.
Yes.
Representative Sumner.
No.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wallace.
No.
Representative Cato?
No.
Representative Jenkins?
Yes.
Representative Pierce?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Yes.
We have 5 yeas and 3 nays.
Okay. The motion did carry. That language is deleted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to move a committee substitute for Senate Bill 120. I guess it would be resources now.
Amended.
All right. Finance.
With individual recommendation.
All right.
There is a motion before us to move the bill from committee. Objections? Hearing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill number 120, resources.
This is done on the floor.
Amended. Has passed the committee. The next bill that we have before us is House Bill 385, and I assume, Ned, that you're here to maybe testify on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I can briefly explain, if you want to listen.
This was not written by the driver.
Oh, no. The bill that is before us, 395, the department has presently in regulation, and they are willing to change the regulation to conform to language that is in other land disposal projects. Before you hit
it. I got a case upstairs.
Okay.
I'm going to
get asked a question.
Okay. Anyway, the department, in order to change that regulation before the land disposals that are coming up here this fall, they feel that by the time they go through the hearing process and everything else, they're not going to be able to change those regulations in a timely manner. So this legislation is before you to try to assist them in doing that.
Mr. Chairman, as Commissioner Warnke says, the department supports this and would like to have this discretion clearly in the statute. We do have it. I'm sorry.
Go ahead for the record.
Ned Farfar from DNR. And we support it. We do have this kind of discretion in some of our other land disposal programs, for instance, home sites, but not in the homestead program. So we would support this amendment. The commissioner distributed the preliminary state land disposals brochure And as you can see, looking at that, we have a new emphasis on homestead offerings after the passage of the homestead statute in 1983. Last year, we were able to get out some homestead lands, but this year, it looks like we'll have our first major offering of homestead land. And we want to be sure that we're able to conduct the lotteries in a way that is acceptable to local people.
Representative Cato.
Mr. Chairman, I am in agreement with the bill, except for one thing. I'd like to put an amendment on it, starting on line 16, changing the period to a comma, and put or mandatory work schedule. Now, my reasoning for that is that there are a great many people, particularly on the U.S. Marine Highway System, that would like to be represented at some of these lotteries, but inasmuch as they're at sea, they cannot possibly be there. This has been long a bone of contention in my district particularly, the fact that they had to be there personally. And if there's a mandatory work schedule where they could not get away, then that would be the same as attending a prep school or being in the service or something like that. So I'd like to move an amendment to, as I said, make the period a comma and add or mandatory work schedule, which would take care of the problem.
Representative Thompson.
I'm going to object to the amendment, Mr. Chairman, because you're going to put DNR in the place of making judgments about what's a mandatory work schedule and what is not, and you're going to spend a lot of time diddling around with this stuff. The existing language is fairly straightforward. You've got medical reason that you can document, or you're in school, or you're in medical service. From my perspective, someone can take leave to attend something like that, and I think that's perfectly appropriate. So,
I'm going to speak in favor of the concept of the amendment, anyway, because I'll give you the prime example. It happened down in Wrangell at the last land sale down there. One of the Campbells who's lived in Wrangell all their lives, his parents have been there for 30, 40 years. The guy was out. You know, they put in for some land, and he's out on the ship and couldn't be there. And as a result, there's his name was called on three different parcels of land, which was land that they wanted. He wasn't there, and the people eventually got it where somebody moved into town a year ago, you know, and it's just floating through town. And talk about an uproar. I mean, I've still got letters floating around on that one.
Okay.
And there, you're not allowed to do it by an attorney. You can't use a power of attorney to be there. The rule now is strictly you have to be there or you're out.
Okay, but Representative Sund, at the same time, I can give you an example of where I took leave without pay, left Delta, flew to Fairbanks, or drove to Fairbanks, flew to Anchorage, chartered to Petersburg for a land disposal and was not drawn.
Okay. Yeah, this wasn't the Marine Highway System. This was a private tug, and
you know,
I didn't have
enough. You know, these brochures are printed now. Okay, and they're going to be printed, and they're going to give the time specific of where these lotteries and when they're going to be held. These people will know months ahead of time. So if they want to, they can be there. If it's of importance to them, they can be there.
Well, I can name you the occasion. The guy was in charge of, you know, he runs the tug, and there was no way to, you know, I can give you a lot of instances in private business where you can have all notice in the world, and you can't get away. You know, if you work for state government, that might be one thing, but the smaller private companies, a lot of people are indispensable.
Mr. Chairman,
Mayor.
I'd like to reinforce what John has said.
Yeah.
I think we're, if we were discriminating against other farmers in the last bill, I think we're definitely discriminating against people who, as an absolute mandatory situation, have to be at work, and we're not allowed the power of attorney, this sort of thing. And I think those occasions you're going to find are far more than one thinks. And I think that they're, as I said, this was brought up not just during this bill, but several years ago in my district, and it's been a bone of contention. And even if you do know in advance, if you're out in the middle of the North Sea, there's no damn way that you're going to...
Don't go.
The point is that it's a mandatory work schedule.
Chairman, we are running short of time, so I'll call a question on the amendment.
Are you in line repeating? Let it catch the line.
Line 16.
Line 16.
Okay.
After appendix.
Okay, voice call vote for HB 395 to add on line 16 after the word attendance.
May I ask one? May we have in there, then, rather than mandatory word, certified?
Fine. We could change the wording. Yes, I would go for that. I was just throwing out.
So instead of mandatory, certified.
Certified.
I understood mandatory. Certified by
the employer, I would expect. The person's employer says he couldn't be there. That I
from a higher authority.
Or DNR. Esther can certify. Right. That'd be fine.
You might want to use the word substantiated or unavoidable or something like that in there.
Homogenized.
Mr. Chairman, just before we have the roll call vote, John, what word would you like to use?
I don't know. That's why I said I supported the amendment and concept. I understand the concept, and I haven't come up with a good word.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, I think the word, it's a good idea to have that sort of an exception because of the problems that Representative Cato and Representative Sun have brought up. And maybe what we can do is go ahead and pass the language out, and we can work with you and try to fix it for the next committee in very short term, if you're willing to do it that way. It's got to move pretty quickly.
Right.
I think it's going to rules, and we can try to work on it today and get that fixed.
Could we do that? Could I get with Representative Cato that we pass?
That we move the amendment conceptually and work on the language and just pass the language around and move it out.
Representative Thompson.
How do you move an amendment conceptually?
We do it judiciary all the time.
We do it
frequently,
Dave. We do it frequently.
I would just, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, you can work on the language on the floor and amend it on the floor or do it in Rules Committee, but I want to vote on the specific amendment, A or A.
I was just wondering if you would withdraw the amendment, allow me to work with you on the bill.
I don't want to withdraw the amendment.
We'll take a vote.
Keep mandatory.
So how exactly does it read?
Certified.
Okay. So it reads after attendance or certified work schedule, comma, or certified work schedule. Is that correct?
I believe that, Mr. Chairman. I believe in doing committee work in committee, not on the floor.
Mandatory.
Okay, so we're taking certified instead of mandatory. Is that what we're doing?
I don't really
certified
get it.
Mandatory.
Ned had a better word down there than either one of them.
Substantiated unavoidable work commitment.
That's much better.
Yeah, but then you're going to have people who are in the hospital saying, well, it's not fair because if I couldn't avoid being here.
Okay, would you read that tally very quickly?
Unavoidable work commitments.
Okay. That's
substantiated unavoidable work commitments.
You want to call a roll call vote?
Okay. Let's see, voice call vote for HB 395 to add on line 16 after the word attendance or substantiated unavoidable work commitment. Representative Schultz.
No.
Representative Cato.
Yes.
Representative Jenkins.
No.
Representative Pierce.
No.
Representative Sun.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
No.
We have two yays and
four. Oh, you got Wallace. Representative Wallace.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wallace.
Yes.
Okay, we have three yays and four against.
Motion failed.
I want you to take the heat from those guys in my district.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question here. This is the first time we've heard this bill, I believe, isn't it? and it's only got one committee referral. So we're going to get this thing back on the floor again without a whole lot of discussion on it, and then just, I think every time we've done that, we've run into problems on the floor or something. So the question to Ned, do all of these people have to be residents before they can apply for the lottery?
They have to be Alaska residents for a year.
So the military service requirement here is that somebody could have been in the state in 1965 and be out transferred out of the state ever since then and would be qualified to make an application.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that they would still be a resident of the state under our definition.
Well, if they're state of origin, whenever they go in the service, is their residential state, or if they're in the service and they transfer it while they're in Alaska.
If you were a resident of the state of Alaska, you were went into the military and you were shipped to Taiwan, yes.
Or if you're in the military and you're stationed in Alaska and you transfer your residency to Alaska, you can make Alaska your point of residence.
Yes.
We entered in, the reason I bring that up is we got into this in the student loan program, and there was a glitch in there where that if you were born of a military person in Alaska and they were transferred out, you could, 19 years later, you could come back and got a student loan. And so we changed that so that you can only be out of the state for 6 years under military service or other reasons and still keep a priority there. But I'm just saying that there is a way here on the military service thing to really give an extreme advantage to somebody who's in the military service that makes Alaska a residence and is gone for 20 years, is still can take part in these lotteries without ever coming back to the state.
What did you do on this on the teacher loan thing to correct it?
Well, we made a six-year thing that if you were, once you were out of the state for over 6 years, you were ineligible for a student loan under the student loan program.
Okay. You could very easily put that in unless you've been out of the state for 6 years.
Yeah, I guess my point was is just to show that there are a couple of other issues here, and I, whatever you want to do with the bill is fine with me. But
well, time, so if this bill is going to, and we're going to be able to change that regulation, we've got to move it along. But I'm willing to work with, like I said, with Representative Cato upon this bill passing out in rules. I know, Leo, we're running out of time, but did you have a comment on the bill? I see you're
it's
down.
It's very simple. It should have said at work circumstances, you know, you had to be there. I understood what you're talking about under that bill. Why don't you put special unavoidable? It might be sickness. You couldn't make it.
Well, we got medical in there, Leo.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, see, I didn't have the bill. I wanted to make sure because I hadn't heard anybody mention it.
Medical center.
Medical school and military are in there.
So is there...
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 395 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Objections? Hearing none, House Bill 395 is moved from the Resources Committee.
Sure does.
You know what that means. The way it's written. It means that I could be going to UAA.
Oh,
yeah.
Resources.
Yeah, that's...